Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Chapter 9, No Sympathy for the Devil, Newsmen Tortured, Flight into Madness. The decision to flee came suddenly. Or maybe not. Maybe I'd planned it all along, subconsciously waiting for the right moment. The bill was a factor, I think, because I had no money to pay for it, and no more of these devilish credit card slash reimbursement deals. Not after dealing with Sydney Zion. They seized my American Express card after that one, and now the bastards are suing me, along with the Diners Club and the IRS. And besides, the magazine is legally responsible. My attorney saw to that. We signed nothing, except those room service tabs. We never knew the total, but just before we left, my attorney figured we were running somewhere between $29 and $36 per hour for 48 consecutive hours. Incredible, I said. How could it happen? But by the time I asked this question, there was nobody around to answer. My attorney was gone. He must have sensed trouble. On Monday evening, he ordered up a set of fine cowhide luggage from room service, then told me he had reservations on the next plane for L.A. We would have to hurry, he said, and on the way to the airport, he borrowed $25 for the plane ticket. I saw him off, then I went back to the airport souvenir counter and spent all the rest of my cash on garbage. Complete shit. Souvenirs of Las Vegas. Plastic, fake Zippo lighters with a built-in roulette wheel for $6.95. JFK half-dollar money clips for $5 each. 10 apes that shook dice for $7.50. I loaded up on this crap and then carried it out to the great red shark and dumped it all in the back seat. And then I stepped into the driver's seat in a very dignified way. The white top was rolled back, as always. And I sat there and turned the radio on and began thinking. How would Horatio Alger handle this situation? One toke over the line, sweet Jesus, one toke over the line. Panic. It crept up my spine like the first rising vibes of an acid frenzy. All these horrible realities began to dawn on me. Here I was, all alone in Las Vegas with this goddamn incredibly expensive car, completely twisted on drugs, no attorney, no cash, no story for the magazine, and on top of everything else, I had a gigantic goddamn hotel bill to deal with. We had ordered everything into that room that human hands could carry, including about 600 bars of translucent Neutrogena soap. The whole car was full of it, all over the floors, the seats, the glove compartment. My attorney had worked out some kind of arrangement with the mestizo maids on our floor to have this soap delivered to us. 600 bars of this weird, transparent shit, and now it was all mine. Along with this plastic briefcase that I suddenly noticed right beside me on my front seat, I lifted the fucker and knew immediately what was inside. No Samoan attorney in his right mind is going to stomp through the metal detector gates of a commercial airline with a bat black 357 Magnum on his person. So he had left it with me for delivery if I made it back to LA. Otherwise, well, I could almost hear myself talking to the California Highway Patrol. What? This weapon? This loaded, unregistered, concealed, and maybe hot 357 Magnum? What am I doing with it? Well, you see, officer, I pulled off the road near Mescal Springs on the advice of my attorney, who subsequently disappeared, and all of a sudden, while I was just sort of walking around that deserted waterhole by myself, for no reason at all, when this little fellow with a beard came up to me out of nowhere, and he had this horrible linoleum knife in one hand and this huge black pistol in the other hand, and he offered to carve a big X on my forehead in memory of Lieutenant Callie. But when I told him I was a doctor of journalism, his whole attitude changed. Yes, you probably won't believe this, officer, but he suddenly hurled that knife into the brackish Mescal waters near our feet, and then he gave me this revolver. Right, he just shoved it into my hands, butt first, and then he ran off into the darkness. So that's why I have this weapon, officer. Can you believe that? No. But I wasn't about to throw the bastard away, either. A good 357 is a hard thing to get these days. So I figured, well, just get this bugger back to Malibu, and it's mine. My risk, my gun. It made perfect sense. And if that Samoan pig wanted to argue, if he wanted to come yelling about around the house, give him a taste of the bugger about midway up the femur. Indeed, 158 grains of half-jacketed lead alloy, traveling 1,500 feet per second, equals about 40 pounds of Samoan hamburger mixed up with the bone splinters. Why not? Madness, madness. And meanwhile, all alone with the great red shark in the parking lot of the Las Vegas airport, to hell with this panic. Get a grip. Maintain. For the next 24 hours, this matter of personal control will be critical. Here I am, sitting out here alone on this fucking desert, in this nest of armed loonies, and a very dangerous carload of hazards, horrors, and liabilities that I must get back to LA. Because if they nail me out here, I'm doomed. Completely fucked. No question about that. No future for a doctor of journalism editing the State Pen Weekly. Better to get the hell out of this atavistic state at high speed. Right, but first, back to the Mint Hotel and cash a $50 check, then up to the room and call down for two club sandwiches, two quarts of milk, and a pot of coffee, and a fifth of Bacardi Anejo. Rum will be absolutely necessary to get through this night, to polish these notes, this shameful diary, keep the tape machine screaming all night long at top volume. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. Sympathy, not for me. No mercy for a criminal freak in Las Vegas. This place is like the army. The shark ethic prevails. Eat the wounded. In a closed society where everybody's guilty, the only crime is getting caught. In a world of thieves, the only final sin is stupidity. It is a weird feeling to sit in a Las Vegas hotel at 4 in the morning, hunkered down with a notebook and a tape recorder, and a $75 a day suite and a fantastic room service bill, run up in 48 hours of total madness, knowing that just as soon as dawn comes up, you are going to flee without paying a fucking penny, go stomping out through the lobby and call your red convertible down from the garage and stand there waiting for it with a suitcase full of marijuana and illegal weapons, trying to look casual, scanning the first morning edition of the Las Vegas Sun. This was the final step. I had taken all the grapefruit and other luggage out to the car a few hours earlier. Now it was only a matter of slipping the noose. Yes, extremely casual behavior, wild eyes hidden behind these Saigon mirror sunglasses. Waiting for the shark to roll up. Where is it? I gave that evil pimp of a carboy $5. A prime investment right now. Stay calm. Keep reading the paper. The lead story was a screaming blue headline across the top of the page. Trio rearrested in beauty's death. An overdose of heroin was listed as the official cause of death for pretty Diane Hamby, 19, whose body was found stuffed in a refrigerator last week, according to the Clark County Coroner's Office. Investigators of the sheriff's homicide team who went to arrest the suspect said that one 24-year-old woman attempting to fling herself through the glass doors of her trailer before being stopped by deputies. Officers said she was apparently hysterical and shouted, "You'll never take me alive." But officers handcuffed the woman and she apparently was not injured. GI drug deaths claimed. Washington AP. A House subcommittee report says illegal drugs killed 160 American GIs last year, 40 of them in Vietnam. Drugs were suspected, it said, and another 56 military deaths in Asia and the Pacific Command. It said the heroin problem in Vietnam is increasing in seriousness, primarily because of processing laboratories in Laos, Thailand, and Hong Kong. Drug suppression in Vietnam is almost completely ineffective, the report said, partially because of an ineffective local police force and partially because some presently unknown corrupt officials in public office are involved in the drug traffic. To the left of that grim notice was a four-column center-page photo of Washington, D.C. cops fighting with young anti-war demonstrators who staged a sit-in and blocked the entrance to Selective Service Headquarters. And next to the photo was a large black headline, "Torture Tales Told in War Hearings, Washington." Volunteer witnesses told an informal congressional panel yesterday that while serving as military interrogators, they routinely used electrical telephone hookups and helicopter drops to torture and kill Vietnamese prisoners. One Army intelligence specialist said the pistol slaying of his Chinese interpreter was defended by a superior who said she was just a slope anyway, meaning she was an Asiatic. Right underneath that story was a headline saying, "Five wounded near New York City tenement by an unidentified gunman who fired from the roof of a building for no apparent reason." This item appeared just above a headline that said, "Pharmacy owner arrested in probe, a result," the article explained, "of a preliminary investigation of a Las Vegas pharmacy showing a shortage of over 100,000 pills considered dangerous drugs." Reading the front page made me feel a lot better. Against that heinous background, my crimes were pale and meaningless. I was a relatively respectable citizen, a multiple felon perhaps, but certainly not dangerous. And when the great scorer came to write against my name, that would surely make a difference. Or would it? I turned to the sports page and saw a small item about Muhammad Ali. His case was before the Supreme Court, the final appeal. He'd been sentenced to 5 years in prison for refusing to kill slopes. "I ain't got nothing against them Viet Congs," he said. 5 years. And this concludes chapter 9.